Both of my cats are here.
All right.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of A Documentary Podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Catherine.
And today is back to being a more regular episode. Mm-hmm. So we watched two films from Frederick Wiseman.
And I'm pretty excited for this episode because he's one of my favorite filmmakers, and I've gained even more appreciation for him after watching the two films we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. So I've been aware of Wiseman for a while, but I've never actually watched one of his films. So I was really excited to finally be able to like dive into it and watch a few. But before we get to that, how have you been?
I've been good. I've been working a lot. So I haven't, like, normally on this podcast, we'll do, like, what have you watched recently? I'm a bit ashamed to say I haven't been watching much recently. Haven't had the time. I did go see Midsommar.
Yeah. Well, first, what have you been working on? I'm curious.
A lot of different things. So, primarily commercial work. So, much of the same, long hours. I was on a shoot, which was cool. It took us all around the state. So, up from Granby down to Westcliff, which I never heard of before, so definitely getting to see a lot of Colorado through work, which is awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just booked a big job to do a like documentary for these two folks that live here that are they do like sound healing. It's pretty interesting. They do like all these gongs and stuff, and they have people like basically they're like meditating with like these blindfolds on that are like super blackout blindfolds. Never anything that I thought I would be doing, but it's super fun so far. So I'm just going to go to a bunch of their events for the next few months and then make them like a short documentary for their website and a few Instagram promos. And
oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and then see where it goes from there. So it's super fun. Then I released my little short film that I did about Revolutionary Left Radio for like a week or two, and then I heard back from the Omaha Film Festival that they needed it to be private if I wanted to be in consideration still, so I put it back on private. But secretly, if anyone wants to see it, just message me, I'll send you a private link. So that's pretty cool. But with that, let's jump into talking about the films we've been watching.
Yes.
Maybe let's change the title of this segment to what we've been watching or recommendations.
Okay, I like that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because then it's more fun because you can kind of pick films that maybe you watched a long time ago, but you know would go well with like the main films we're talking about. But mine are going to be more what I've been watching lately.
Mm-hmm.
Or specifically two things that I've watched recently, and they're not related really to this. Well, they could maybe be related to Titty Cup Follies a little bit. But the two series I watched were on Netflix. They both are on their second season, one's on their first season and the other one's on the second season. And, they're Exhibit A and Confession Tapes. So I think they have some like similar production company behind them. Cause Exhibit A, is a series on Netflix. I think there's only like four episodes right now. But it kind of goes into like different forensics and their flaws. So like it goes into like video evidence. It has one about, I forgot what the other two were. I know one is like touch DNA, which I still have to watch that episode. The other one was blood splatter. And so they kind of just dive into cases where these forensics were used, but where they're really flawed. And it's kind of a frustrating watch, similar to all those, but yeah. And then Confession Tapes is a series of, it's just a whole, each episode is a different case where they got false confessions.
Oh.
And that's also kind of a brutal watch, but they're really good, like if you're into like true crime and stuff, because it definitely covers that kind of stuff. But I like it a little bit because it's kind of more critical of maybe the police in general, not giving them just such a pass for everything. But yeah. And then you were saying you went and saw Midsommar.
I did see Midsommar, yes. It was fine. I think I was expecting it to actually be scary, and it really wasn't. Like in comparison to Hereditary, which was the director's last film. It's what I do like about his films, though, is he kind of presents the horror of like family and societal structure. So it's not necessarily like jump scary, it's that our own lives can be just as terrifying and messed up. And he, yeah, really. This one, he definitely does that. So I'd say it's worth seeing, but nothing really stood out to me in the film. So.
Nice. And yeah, before we did this podcast, I started watching a third Weissman film. But I can't talk about it too much because I'm only like 15 minutes into it. But it was called Crazy Horse.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, so far, it's just mostly been like the dancing. So I haven't really gotten a bigger
Yeah.
picture of what the story is. And one of the interesting things about Weissman that I think we can get to is that. Once we dive into the main films, is just how you don't really know what the thesis of the film is about, kind of towards the end, until the end.
Yep. I literally put a note on my like document that's like there's this one pivotal moment in all of his films where you're like, oh, I finally get it.
Yeah.
And it's usually like 2/3 to 3/4 of the way through, there'll be some conversation that happens amongst the characters or people he's filming, and you're like, oh, this is it.
Yep.
Which, yeah.
Well, with that, let's get into our main films.
Okay. I do have one recommendation
Oh,
though,
okay.
real quick. It's another Weissman film, but I think it pairs really well with Aspen, which is Monrovia, Indiana, which I believe was his last film that came out about a year ago. And it's structured this, well, all his films are kind of structured the same, but it presents the complete polar opposite to Aspen, like or the demographics. So if you want to see two different classes of people, I'd say it's a really good back-to-back watching if you can handle 5 hours of Weissman, though.
I think if you're in a meditative mood, you can do it.
Yes,
You can do
yeah.
it, guys. I did it. I did it today. I watched two Weissman in a row.
Oh wow, that's an undertaking right there.
Yeah. Well, I woke up early to do
Okay, yeah.
it. Yeah, so I have more to say about that as well. Oh, yeah. One of the frustrating things I'm finding out about Weissman is that the production, they're not streaming in a lot of places, and you can't buy them on iTunes or Amazon or anything. So I think I'm just gonna have to like buy a bunch of DVDs from them.
But his entire, he released everything on Canopy now. Almost everything.
Oh yeah, almost everything is on there, but Monrovia is still not.
Maybe it's too new.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that's what it is, but I tried to buy it on iTunes so we could hopefully talk about it. And then it wasn't on there. And then I tried Amazon, it wasn't on there. And I was like, damn. So I found you can only get it through his website. So there was no way I was going to get it in time for this episode. But I really want to see it because I heard there were some controversies about it. And I just kind of wanted, I was just curious to dive into it a little bit. But with that, we'll get to our two main films. The two films we're
Sure.
talking about.
I'll, yeah, so we're going to talk about Titty Cut Follies, which is actually, I didn't realize this, his first film, which is incredibly impressive that that's what his first, or his first documentary. And the other one is Aspen, And so, do you want to start with Titty Cut Follies? I can give a brief summary.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so Titty Cut Follies came out in 1967, and it portrays the pretty horrific conditions that exist in the state prison for the criminally insane in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. And it looks at all the different
Oh,
sort
sorry.
of role, yeah, that's okay. And it looks at all the different roles and hierarchy and how poorly these people are being treated and very like inhumanely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first note I wrote down was humiliating undressing. And I wrote down racism as well because it seemed like, to me, like the guards, one of my one of, in the one of the first scenes, these guards are like making all of the, it's hard, you don't know if you should call them patients or inmates because it's supposed to be like a hospital sit like scenario, but it's like worse than any prison I've seen.
Yeah, they're treated as prisoners. It's, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that first scene they're making everyone undress, but then the guards are like pretty indifferent the whole time. But then like whenever there was this black man that they were talking to, their tone of voice completely changed. And man, what an upsetting start to this film.
Yeah, and I find it gets harder and harder to watch as you go
Yeah.
because it opens with this song and it's a performance and you don't fully realize where they are. That's like a lot of his films. You don't know the full place until it gets going. And that song keeps repeating itself or this performance in the middle and the end. And every time you see it, as it progresses, you feel more and more uncomfortable because you know that these people are being, like you're saying, being humiliated. And that it's just the show. It's not their actual performance, and they don't necessarily are, they're not there voluntarily.
Yeah, and I think that that was really interesting. And this is just kind of a side note. This doesn't really, I think that he kind of like ties it in a little bit at the end. First off, if you haven't seen this and you're worried about spoilers, this probably isn't gonna be, because I have to talk about the end to talk about the thesis of both of these films. So go and try to watch them if you can first. You can get them streaming on Canopy. If your library has a deal with them, that's really the only place I know to watch them right now.
But I will say Weissman films don't really have spoilers,
Yeah,
really.
totally.
It'll I guess it'll We'll give the thesis or like what it's about away, but the way his films run, I don't, they're not like very specific events or revealing
Yeah,
moments.
exactly. Okay, so I just, but the one thing that I thought about from the first scene and to the end scene is from the first scene, I thought that like the warden or whatever you call that guy, head of security, whoever he is, I thought he was one of the patients. And towards the end, you realize like he looks more crazy than any of the quote unquote like crazy people in there. Like he's up there and like putting on this like strange show. And he just has this like evil face. And at the beginning, it doesn't seem evil, but at the whenever they show him again at the end, to me it was just so menacing, 'cause you're like, oh, this guy's a sick person. Like in a way that they kind of tie it in throughout the whole film, especially with the one guy who's saying that he's getting worse the longer he's there. And he keeps going to the guards and he's like, look, I'm worse. It might be the medication, maybe it's the other patients, but I feel worse every day I'm here. I'm losing weight, you know? And then they just like write him off, like, oh, he's so delusional right now, you
Well,
know?
then they say they're just going to give him like up his medicine instead of
Yeah.
listening to him.
And they're gonna give him more tranquilizers and stuff,
Yeah.
yeah. And so, to me, that was like the most sane person in the film. You know, and it was like really hard to watch in that way because this guy basically like got sent to this this hospital. You kind of like hear it a little bit, but he got sent to this hospital by a prison that he was in because he went and talked to a a prison doctor and told him that he was depressed and stuff. And then they sent him to this like hospital for the clinically insane, yeah, essentially.
But I think he was also potentially schizophrenic.
Yeah.
Because there was one part where he was like, they were in the prison, they were poisoning his coffee or something.
But
I will say, though, that, like, there are better ways to treat schizophrenia than locking someone up and giving them tranquilizers. And it's, like, it was heartbreaking to see that, like, he thought prison would be better than where he was. Like,
yeah,
that's just so wrong.
At this place that's supposed to be, like, helping people.
Yes.
And curing, like, ailments, essentially.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was like, that was really hard to watch. And then it also struck me just how talented a lot of the people were. Like, they're like wonderful singers, and just, you know, there was so much like, whenever they would go to the performances, like, it was a little weird, you know, because of knowing that where they are, but like them as human beings were just so talented.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this specific one little scene where this guy is playing guitar and the two men are singing, and it's just like a quick, like maybe like 30 second to a minute of them singing this song. And it was just, yeah, it was just really kind of a beautiful moment. Because so much of the film is so hard to watch.
Yeah, and what I was very surprised by, that it's still hard to watch even though these people know they're being, like, the guards know they're being filmed, so they're probably on their best behavior, and this is still the product. And I think it also shows, like, the power of Weissman, because he is able to find certain moments that really reveal people's characters, or this, or sort of the dynamics that are going on between people, because he spends a lot of time showing, like, the rooms or the cells, basically, that the patients are staying in. They have literally just a mattress, and there's some really strong imagery of, like, them, like, shutting the door and, like, looking through these windows, and these people are just, like, so alone and so isolated. So I think he does, like, incredible camera work to sort of bring out the stuff that maybe the guards or these people are trying to hide.
I was doing a little reading after I watched this, just because I was curious, because, you know, it's, I was just like, how was the reception at the time, you know, to go in and film all these, like, clearly, like, people that were just, you know, had some mental health, like, severe mental health issues, and, you know, what kind of the ethics were about filming it? Because at first you're almost like, oh, I'm just, like, weirdly, like, peering in, watching these people be, you know, are they being exploited for this film, et cetera, et cetera. But I think as we got to the end of the film, you realize, oh, this film is actually about the guards, and the camera is like looking at these patients slash prisoners in a very human way. And there's a lot of care there, because they want to like linger and make you see it, see what's happening to them. And in a way, the interesting thing is like, this is like such an activist film, but it's so subtly an activist film. Like, it doesn't have a bunch of facts that pop up on the screen. It doesn't have a narration that tells you exactly what to think, but you watch it and then you realize how kind of sociopathic these like guards are and stuff. And the warden,
and the doctor, the doctor too, who literally, he thinks he's God. Like, he doesn't listen to anyone, and it's just so out of touch with the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was so much of that. Just, like, all these doctors that were just, like, talking down to these people and not, they didn't have that care, you know? And the interesting thing is, there's this one pivotal scene in the film where this guy, Jim, you know, he, the guards are like taunting him while he's getting a shave, and they're like, hey, is your room going to be cleaner tomorrow, Jim? And then he'll answer, and then they're like, what, Jim? Say it again, Jim. And they're just like, it's so frustrating, and you can feel his frustration, and you can feel like how broken down these guards are making him feel. And then there's a scene afterwards where the camera is just lingering on him in his room, as he's like banging, stomping around and like banging on the window. And you just feel that frustration. And the whole time the guard is still taunting him. And when I was reading afterwards, that scene actually might have played a pivotal role in having this hospital get shut down. And then later on, seven of the family members of different inmates sued this hospital, and a lot of it came from them watching this film.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah, that's.
Yeah, so this film, without any narration, without any facts that pop up on the screen, with just observing people in this kind of situation. And sure, there's some manipulation with like editing and stuff, like that's just filmmaking, like we know that. But you can make like a quiet, meditative film like this and still be super impactful and actually like make something that actually has some real world benefit to people.
Yeah, I just love how his films, like, you feel more than just like a fly on the wall because it almost is like you're sitting at the table, like, watching these conversations happen or watching these interactions. Or, like, when he films sort of the, I'm gonna call them inmates because that's basically how they're treated, but the patients, like, walking down the hallway, he puts you in the middle of them, not necessarily behind. So it is like such a very like open look at a place and people.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something I picked up in the film. And I just really loved how, you know, we can talk about it a little bit with Aspen too, just how, again, like at first you're like, okay, what exactly is this film? And then as it goes along, you start, it like peels back the layers, you know, just as it goes on, just little by little. And then by the time you get to the end, you have like a full kind of picture of like what this film is about.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a time capsule of a place that I really appreciate. Like, I think it could be used to like for historical context as well, because you're seeing every aspect of life in as unbiased, I think, of a way as possible. But one thing I also sort of noticed about his films now that I've seen more is he always includes like very kind of pivotal moments of life. Like there's always usually some sort of death or funeral, a lot of church aspects, more in Aspen than this one.
Yeah, I
What else
actually
did I?
did write that down too, that
Birthdays.
I wrote down the priest, you know, and then there's that scene where they're intercutting between the same guy, him being force-fed while he was still alive, and him on basically dead and on the, you know, whatever you, I don't know what to call it, what they put the bodies on, and
And it
they're,
was so like that image, it's so sterile and it's like this metal box and like that, yes, that is where bodies go, but it just showed how little care these people had for the patients.
Yeah, well, it's going back and forth between him on this like table getting force-fed, and then him on this table when, as you know, he's dead. And then they're have him in the coffin, and then it's, you know, back to him, like they're pulling the tube out, and then he's walking away, then they put him in the cell. And then as the cell door closes, it goes back, and then they're putting the casket in the, you know, in the wall, and then they're closing that door.
And it's just so sad because there's nobody at his funeral. And like a priest says a couple words, and they're just like, okay, like as so nonchalantly and like as if nothing really happened. Like it's just a daily part of their life, like for the guards.
And like there's no humanity there, you know? And there's one part where you get some humanity from the people in charge, and it's like there's a bunch of nurses, I think, that are in the room, and they're talking about how it's nice that they feel like they're doing some good, you know, whenever they can like help people. And that's like the only part where you get any kind of like humanity.
But I still felt
Well,
there was
there was
a
like an
bit of
evil nurse that
ego. Yeah, there's a bit of ego and sort of, what's the word, like separation, if that makes sense, where they're like, oh, I did good. And they pers like they felt good about themselves, more of like about themselves, and that the other person is doing better.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I do want to talk about this film a little bit more, but I also want to bring in the next film that we're talking about, which is Aspen.
Yeah, so Aspen is a film about the town of Aspen in Colorado, most famously known as a very kind of wealthy ski town. And it follows the very frivolous lives, especially like the intellectual and art world that exists there during the winter. I'd highly recommend it because I've always had an issue with Aspen. Like, as a skier, Aspen is one of the places I really don't like, and this film is exactly why I am not a fan of that place. Like, it puts it all into one film, and I'm like, these are my feelings about it, and yeah, he does it for me. I don't really, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things I love about Weissman that I'm finding is that he makes these films where there's never like a through line as far as like a character or anything. He kind of like peeks into a bunch of different worlds in order to present a full thesis. And this film specifically, like I read an article after this called, I think I sent it to you. It was just
Yeah,
called like,
I skimmed it real quickly.
yeah, it's called Frederick Weissman's Aspen is an unsung American masterpiece. And that's how I felt while I was watching it. I was just kind of shocked by how good it was. And I think that maybe the reason why it didn't really take off is because people are like, who the fuck wants to watch a documentary about a rich town in Colorado where a bunch of celebrities own houses? You know, like, who gives a shit about that?
Yeah,
Because.
one of the comments on Canopy was literally like, I don't need to spend 3 hours watching rich people live their lives. But it's,
Well, that's how I felt when you were like, let's do Aspen. And I was like, okay.
I just wanted to do it because I think it was like, this was a good film to choose, even though it is about a bunch of rich people, because we are based out of Colorado. And I have spent like time out there and worked out there, and I think he captures the place perfectly.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things about this film is like, yes, it is like mainly rich people. Like it starts out kind of with this kind of party in the mountains, and I guess it was like a CEO was having a party, and there's all these like super 90s ski looking people,
The
like,
ski outfits are incredible, just for
yeah,
that alone. Yeah.
totally. And it looks like almost like a joke of what you would think of a 90s movie. But it's a documentary, and that's how people were actually dressed.
Yeah.
And so it kind of starts with that, but there is a little bit of. So this is like that film again. You're like, okay, so this is about rich people, great. And then it goes into the mine, like goes follow some miners for a little bit. And then, you know, you see these people working in the mines, and then you see this like family. They're having like a re it looked like a reunion. Was it a reunion?
No, it was
Was it
a
a wedding?
40th. It
It
was
was
a
the
40th
40th, yeah.
wedding anniversary, which I really thought was interesting because that's when you first see the mix of upper and lower class. Because up until then, you have the lower class always shot separately, like the miners or the farm at the beginning, or then you have like the rich people walking around in fur coats, but they never really intersect, and that's when you start to see them coming together, and it is kind of uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. And it really makes you just think about like the main, like all these rich people are there and they're just kind of like doing all these things and they're having these like weird art classes at some giant mansion in the mountains. There's like this dinner party at another mansion in the mountains, like right after that, where these people are having this like philosophical conversation, you know, just like really snooty about it though. And
So,
then,
yeah.
yeah. And then there's like kind of mixed in a little bit are these like normal people, these like farmers, these miners, this family like having their like 40th anniversary.
But there was still a lot of racism and inappropriate, I think, comments
Yeah.
during that. So
Yeah.
even that, they make a very distasteful joke about Indians or Native, we would now say Native Americans, but even there, they're like sipping champagne out of fancy glasses and it just always feels like it's tripping in wealth and money.
Yeah, and there's like that scene where, oh my God, the
The book
cosmetic
club.
surgery. Oh, that
Oh,
too.
that's
But
okay.
the
We'll get to that. Yeah.
yeah, the cosmetic surgery scene. Oh my God.
See, that's the issue I have with Aspen is, and he portrayed it so well, the vanity and image that's associated with this town. Maybe not everyone, but it's all about appearances. It's all about showing how intellectual you are, how cultured and how artistic you are, but in such a vain way. It's not done authentically. It's just because people want to just show off. And I think that's my opinion of Aspen as well. And from all those images, like you're saying, the hair salon, the cosmetic surgery, the fancy fur coats, like it's just this bombardment of like, ugh, I
Yeah.
don't,
There
yeah.
was a comment at the 40th anniversary though from one of the family members about how Aspen is changing. And it's funny to watch it in 2019 and know that it's like completely gone now. But then it seemed like it was kind of right at that moment where it was like really being taken over, you know? Like and changing like from kind of more of a mining like ski town, you know, with like ski bums and stuff and like all these like workers and miners being there to being like kind of a rich people's playground. And it kind of seemed like this is when it got really big. But now you go to Aspen and it's like it's just that now, pretty much, you
Yeah,
know.
like I have friends who'll defend it, but I think I'm gonna show them this film now and be like, no. Yeah, like you're saying, it is a rich people's playground.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but it's also really funny too, because like you see this like rich lady trying to ski and she's like falling and she's like, but she's on like the steepest, you know, fucking like
Yeah.
slope I've ever seen. But she just doesn't know how to ski and you're like, what makes you think you can do that? Like,
Yeah.
and then there's like, oh my God, just this art class is so ridiculous and this, oh man, I don't even, there was so much stuff. Oh, the charade scene.
Oh, the scene at the end. You're just like, oh. And I'm
Yeah.
very curious too, after all these films, because he does present them in, I think, a very truthful, honest way. But if people who are in the film feel like ashamed of it after, because if that was me and I watched it, I'd be like, oh my God, like,
I doubt it. I don't
I
think they're
can't.
self-aware enough.
No, that's actually true.
I
Yeah.
think that they just watch and they're like, that's funny.
Yeah.
Look how
Ooh, I'm
silly we
in.
are.
Or it's another like dinner party conversation. I was in a Weissman film.
Yeah. So one of the things I love about the film, again, like Titty Cut Follies, but this one I think, you know, this is further along in his career and I think he has more of a like this is a stronger film per se. Like maybe this and the subject matter is impossible. Like the fact that he did this and like it works so well is amazing. It kind of reminded me of like Robert Altman or something. Like just the way it unfolds and the camera work. And the other thing I love is a lot of this kind of more verite filmmaking and stuff is a lot of times like really handheld and shaky and it kind of has a specific style and it seems like he just completely foregoes that. Like he doesn't participate in that.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool because I think it gives the film more of a what did you say earlier? It's like,
Oh, it's like you're sitting at the table.
yeah, exactly. It gives
Not
you,
just on the wall, you're in it.
yeah, and I think that that's really important, especially what he does with B-roll of people's faces and stuff. Like, because I've noticed that he does a lot of like he'll be filming a talk, you know, and then he'll be like going in on people's faces, you know, through the.
What's interesting about that, I was reading an interview with him this morning, and he talks about the purpose behind his editing is always why. And he says that like the way a person moves or which way they look kind of encompasses all of that. Like, why do they use certain language? Why do they look a certain way? Why do they care about certain things? And you can see that, like you're saying, in his edits, and he really focuses on where people are looking and like how they interact with each other.
Yeah, and one of the things I love is just like you kind of start with seeing all these rich people. Every now and then it kind of cuts back to like more working people. And then it kind of goes on to like a lot of different talks about like Christianity. Like starting off with like I put yuppie Christians, quote unquote, because he actually says they're in that category, so that's not just me saying that. Talking economics, and they're like, what would God's economics look like? And that was kind of like, oh, that was the pivotal moment for me. And I was like, this is exactly what this film is about. You know, it's like a homogenous culture trying to like figure itself out in a way, but in such a, like a frivolous kind of
Very ironic what they're saying, too.
exactly. Yeah. And it's very ironic because they're like, it's about equity and et cetera, and like,
Or how they use Christianity to basically reason everything they're doing. Like earlier, there's a Bible study where they're talking about divorce, and at first they're like, divorce is horrible. And then they get to the point where they're like, no, divorce is okay. Probably because most of these men, it's also all white men sitting around a table, are going to be divorced at one point in their
Well, and
life.
a bunch of them already are. And they're
And
like,
are, yeah.
they're, and even the guy who's like talking about how divorce is a sin, he's like, I mean, I have to admit that that's a sin I committed.
Yeah.
and then, oh my God. And then later on, there's that other pastor who, again, this kind of goes back with like the casual racism that like the, it gets really bad in the, this one's a little more subtle, but it's really bad in the cosmetic surgery scene. It's horrifically like, you're just like, dude, what the fuck? But this pastor, like later on in the film, and he starts talking about, you couldn't go to a church in the inner city of Denver. They have security guards that are worried about, and he does it, like he says all this like horrible stuff, and then he says, but they're our family.
Oh, and it was like, no, they're not your family, because if you look in that room, besides one African American lady, everyone else is white.
Yep, and
And
then
I think you'll notice that like there is segregation and they aren't one family because there's only one African American woman in that scene, and throughout the entire film it's pretty much only white people. And I will say
oh,
that is
yeah.
an issue just for skiing in general. It is an elitist white sport. But that last scene, you're just like, yeah, like you're saying, they're not one family. They're completely separate.
Yeah, and then he does this thing that I think a lot of kind of churches do, like coming from like kind of my background, where they'll talk shit about a lot of people. He just starts listing off all this like terrible stuff these people have been through to like prove his point. And then to just be like, oh, but you know, God's looking out for them and it's miraculous. And you're like, okay. But it kind of fits in with that whenever he's talking about the inner cities versus the and then he starts going off on all that stuff. Like one of the things he really talks about is like the that actually is true, but I don't think that he's aware enough to know that it's actually true. That under all of the gloss and all of the sheen kind of Aspen and stuff, that there still is struggle. And I think that that kind of refers almost back to like the working people that are kind of like working to make all of their lives like so much more cushy. You know, like you think about like when people talk about holidays, you know, rich people talk about like holidays, like, oh, we're gonna take this like time off and go to Aspen for the winter and blah, blah, blah. And then whenever they do that, there has to be this whole wing of like, you know, regular folk who make that possible for them to eat and go to the stores and to go to the ski, you know, villages and whatnot, you know. So there's always kind of this like underclass of people like making things possible for them. And then so I put some of the notes I put were just like lots of Christian themes, inequality, gentrification, racism, money,
Sexism.
sexism, yeah.
For me, the pivotal, like we were talking about earlier, there's always a conversation. It's usually a conversation in the film, where you just get it. And for me, it was the book club
Oh,
where they're talking.
yeah.
Oh, I got so frustrated. They're talking about Flaubert, and this older man was just like ripping on the book because he's like, they were living such a simple life, and because their life was so simple, it was not worthwhile. And I think that reflects a lot of the the rich people's views in Aspen, that like if you're not living this sort of intellectual cultured life, there is no point of your life. And he was very critical of it being a woman main character, and there was one lady in there who was definitely defending the book and trying. And I really appreciated her view. So it did show as well that like not all of Aspen is that distasteful, and that it's okay to live a simple life. But I think those people are just so caught up in their world that they can't see another way of life.
Yeah. Well, I took like the normal families and the working people parts, which were kind of disproportionate, but I think that was purposeful because that's dying out.
It is, yeah.
And I think that that represented kind of the gentrification of Aspen in a way. I mean, it was probably never super, like you said, like with the racist thing, like it was probably never super diverse, you know, in a sense, like it was probably like super, but like as far as class goes, I think that they kind of represented the the class that was kind of losing the war in Aspen and now completely has, you know. Because now Aspen is just like, even back then there were some, there showed shots of like people going into like stores and shopping and stuff, but now Aspen's like basically like a giant bourgeois mall, you know.
Well, it is. Like I, the first time I went there was like two falls ago to go see the Aspen's change in Maroon Bells, and I had never seen more plastic surgery in my life. And I like, and I knew there was this like image and sort of stereotype of Aspen, but like as someone who grew up spending a lot of time in ski towns that are the complete opposite, I was just like shocked. And it's like Chanel, Louis Vuitton, like instead of having like pizza places and bars, you have the finest shopping and just people who just look so different than what I'm used to seeing in a ski town.
Yeah. With both of these films, it makes me curious if Weissman is a Marxist, because there's a dialectic in both of his films, both of these specifically, which really just kind of shows the struggle between classes, you know, like the doctors and the guards and stuff are kind of the elites in Titty Cut Follies, you know, and then there's a little more proportional representation of the lower classes there, because I think that they are every day intertwined. But even actually the doctors don't even appear that much, so they're probably more like the elite. But anyway,
I would agree from these two films, but this is why Monrovia, Indiana needs to like come on a streaming service, because I think you'd really appreciate it.
Yeah.
But that critiques a more blue collar middle America class just as much as this critiques the wealthy. And that's why I think it pairs so well with Aspen, because they also both are bookended the same with like churches and religion, and how similarly that class or that society is using religion in a very racist way as well. But
interesting. I'll have to see it, because the Aspen film just kind of like seemed very specifically like very in tune with like Bechtel Brecht would call like the Marxist aesthetic, which is just kind of like critiquing capitalism in kind of a more subtle way, but by just showing people's lives, you know, like he didn't have to go in there and be like, look how silly all these rich people are. He just pointed a camera at them and let them do their thing.
But is that maybe just because of that's how society is in the States, or how these communities are? Because I was reading that he, when he makes a film, he doesn't do any research. He goes in and films everything for just like 8 weeks, and then edits for like almost or over half a year, and finds the story within the edit and tries to find like the why people are this way. And so I think as filmmakers, you're always going to put your bias in, but or your opinions.
And like, that's,
it's
mine.
Kind of impossible. that's yours. But I think that this is just more of a mirror on what our society actually is. And sometimes it's hard to look at ourselves and this is what's going on in our country.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I will say that Marxism is Marx's like specifically him looking at what capitalism is and how classes relate. That's all it is really. It's not really like an ideology of like, he doesn't really go into what it should look like. He just goes into, this is society, this is the capitalist structure, this is how classes are at war with each other. And so I think that inherently, if you're gonna do a film about like rich people taking over an old mining town, you're gonna pretty much, it's just gonna inherently be that critique. So that's probably what it is more say like more so, because I think that it is just looking at how like class relations work, but he did it in a like superior way. Like I haven't seen a documentary that got me that. I mean, it's 2.5 hours of a bunch of random shots of Aspen, basically, and he pulls out this like incredible critique of society, or at least like of the American, you know, inequality, essentially. I don't know how else to describe it, but yeah, he just pulled out this like amazing critique from this film, and I was just like really enthralled by it, just because of how subtly he can do it.
It's so subtle, and like, just as a preface, his films do take effort and work to watch. Because it's not, like you're saying, it's not all thrown at you, and there is that ending sort of moment where it all comes together. But that's why I love his film so much, is how subtle it is, and it makes you like ask questions and sort of like analyze your own life or like your part within society.
Absolutely. Man, I loved these movies. Yeah, we should do some more. We should do another Weissman episode next.
I would totally be down for another Weissman, because my other one more thought I have to add about him is I really appreciate his like round table conversations that he films. In all of his films, he usually does that, and through them, he'll present sort of like both sides of the argument just by what people are saying. And it's just I think the power of our conversation has so much power, and he really uses that throughout.
Absolutely. I think that that should be like a lesson for a lot of other filmmakers, is just that, especially documentary films, like you can get so much of a story just by letting people talk to each other. Like we don't have to like set up like talking head films all the time with like text that flies up over all the facts and stuff. Like you can, I just think that his films are kind of like a master class on how to make a film that reflects society and can be really powerful and have a lot of meaning to it, and also tell a story outside of how we typically set up story structures, especially like what you learn in like film school and stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And he just lets the conflict find itself almost. Like,
Yeah.
it's not, yeah.
And you just gotta let films breathe, because if people can connect to it and you can take a minute, then you can really. Yeah, I think that that's what helped me connect to these films so much too, is like there's so much room to breathe in it and to kind of like take it in.
And that's what I think he used the snow plows for. Like the snow plows kind of come between the different chapters, and they have this almost like meditative sound, and it allows you to sort of like, yeah, like think, figure out where you're at within the film, and just kind of get ready for the next part.
I also love his establishing shots, like, hey, we're outside in Aspen, and here's the exterior of a building. Oh, now we're in that building. Now we're out. And then now we're in. I wasn't talking to you, Siri. Jeez. But yeah. And then, yeah, he goes back to more wide shots and stuff. And yeah, it's really cool. I'm really glad that I watched those movies, and now I can't wait to dive into more.
I know, it just makes you, yeah, want to do more. What I love is he covers such a vast array of like subjects. So there's something I think for like everyone. He has some about dancing, the zoo, about Berkeley. Like it's just he the National Gallery. Like you can learn about anything kind of through his films.
All right. Well, that does it for another episode of a documentary podcast.
Thanks for listening.
You can follow us on Instagram at a documentary podcast.
Oh, and our website, adocumentarypodcast.com.
The music is by Timothy DeCans. And you could follow me on Instagram at Joshua LeBure.
And then myself at CMS Moments.
All right, well, thank you, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.